From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
And welcome. It is the Disc Golf News for the week of July 4, 2005. I'm Brian Sullivan. Coming up this time, how does a disc get made, that whole creation process? We'll find out that and more in our interview with Discraft president and founder Jim Kenner. That's coming up later. Des Redding is here. She'll explain how she grips her discs in the 60-second clinic. We've got results from the Michiana Open in South Bend. Some amazing stuff happening there. Yeti, speaking of amazing stuff, he bagged a new course record last weekend. He'll tell you about that in the Yeti Road Report. And we'll look ahead to this weekend's national tour event, the Brent Hambrick Memorial Open in Columbus, Ohio. It's all on the way on this edition of PDGA Radio News, brought to you by Discraft at discraft.com. Also, No Obstacles Disc Golf at plu-ent.com and Innova Champion Discs, innovadisc.com.
The Champion Sidewinder from Innova is the latest addition to the state-of-the-art Champion line. The Sidewinder is designed for long turnover shots and long-distance rollers. The extra-long glide will add D to your drives no matter how big your arm is. And the Sidewinder is made with Champion line plastic, so it holds up round after round. Your game just got better with the new Sidewinder from Innova, number one in disc golf.
The big guns and those who challenge them were in South Bend, Indiana last weekend for the Michiana Open. Results coming your way, beginning with an amateur, David Kostruba. He finished in 40th place, but get this, two aces for the guy on Saturday. And then again on Sunday, back-to-back aces, four on the weekend. More on that coming up later in the show. Now to the pros, the Masters Division. Rod Fritz, a couple of hot rounds on Saturday, and he will coast to victory, winning 5-6 over Paul Pazanin, who takes second place, and one throw behind him is Bob Perry for third. In the women's division, a light turnout here, and Des Redding has no problem handling Amy Campbell. They will finish first and second, respectively. And in the open division, Matt Oram is matching Barry Schultz shot for shot in every round except round three, when Schultz says, "See ya!" A new course record of 1,200 for him, a round rating of 1,080. He'll take first and win it by nine. Matt Oram, second place, and a tie for third between Jay Redding and Justin Bunnell. That's the Michiana Open. Time now for the 60-second clinic. A lot of people get all uptight when they're selecting discs. Oh, gee, which disc should I choose? Maybe instead what you ought to be focusing on is which grip should I use on the disc that I choose. Some help on your grip selection this week from 2002 Women's World Champ Des Redding.
Grips are a very important aspect of the game. You can use two basic ones. When I drive, I use what is called a power grip, and basically I tuck all my fingers underneath the rim of the disc, and I actually put my thumb mostly towards the center. I feel like it gives me a lot of power, and I use that on my drives, mid-ranges, and some of my longer approaches from maybe 180 and in. Anything closer, like maybe 80 feet to a putt, I would use what is considered a control grip, and that I just put the index finger on the outside of the rim, and basically the three fingers are fanned on the bottom of the grip. The theory behind this is when you actually release it, the last point to touch the disc is going to be this index finger, and if you release nice and smooth and follow through, you're going to have it go right to the target.
Des Redding is the PDGA Women's Pro World Champion of 2002.
When you think disc golf, think No Obstacles. No Obstacles Disc Golf is found at www.plu-ent.com. Find information about No Obstacles events, like the Discraft Michigan Disc Golf Series stop at Boyne Mountain and Boyne City, and the Shanty Creek Throwdown. Quality events, quality disc golf products, and outstanding service. When you think disc golf, think No Obstacles at plu-ent.com.
What's up? This is Steve Yurico, and you're listening to PDGA Radio News.
In the big picture this week, a discussion with Discraft founder and president Jim Kenner. In the first of a two-part interview, we'll be talking with Jim Kenner about the history of his company, Discraft, and how a golf disc is created. Jim Kenner, welcome to PDGA Radio.
Thank you, Brian.
You are the president of Discraft, and you've been you're the guy who founded the company. So, give us an idea of when you started, how you started, and why you started.
We started back about 1979, and the reason we started was We thought at the time that we could make some discs that were better for the sports we were playing, which at that time was freestyle and ultimate. We all played golf at that time also, but it was just one of many sports that were being played. So the first couple of discs we concentrated on were the freestyle disc and the ultimate disc. We were pretty successful in that arena. We created the SkyStyler 160 gram freestyle disc in 1980, and it's still probably the top premier freestyle disc, even though freestyle is kind of faded to the side a little bit. It's starting to have a resurgence, especially in Europe. There's a lot of new freestyle tournaments popping up. And in 81, we created our first ultimate disc and started promoting that to the ultimate teams, which at that time was the WAMO 175, was the kind of official disc for ultimate. Worked real hard on promoting it through different tournaments, and by mid-80s probably had about 30-40% of the market, and by the early 90s we had even a larger share and got together with the UPA, and we've kind of been the official disc for ultimate ever since. Disc golf we started in about 1983, thinking seriously about disc golf. Just kind of modified one of our smaller kind of throw and catch discs, which was the SkyStar, and made what we call our first golf disc. We actually printed golf disc on it, but it really wasn't a golf disc in terms of today's standards. 1983, Huntsville, we made our first actual golf disc, which was still a traditional shape disc. It was called the SkyStreak. And it was made, the big difference, it was made out of super durable plastic, which in essence is the same plastic that we're putting into our Z discs these days. And we followed that the next year with the Phantom, which was also made out of the high durability plastic. And that was kind of the big selling point that we had. Hey, here's a disc that you can throw and beat into trees. In fact, the first disc in Huntsville, we were having people test it against a brick wall, throwing it as hard as they could just to see if somebody could break it, and it barely was putting scratches on it. And in those days, that was a big concern because a lot of the discs were bending up and breaking, and so we had a little bit of an advantage in that arena, but took us a couple years to kind of really get in step with the disc golf. Our first breakthrough disc was the Eclipse in 89, and then we started making more models, Marauders, Shadows, some of these discs that aren't here anymore. And then in about 93, we made a bunch of molds, Magnet, Cyclone, Hawk, those kind of things. And Cyclone was probably a big breakthrough. We got even a different plastic. It was kind of in between the D plastic and what we call the Z plastic now, and kind of revolutionized the plastic in the industry, and was... The Cyclone probably was the hottest disc on the market for 2 or 3 years. And since then, we've just been trying to keep up.
Well, let me back up for a second and address something that you mentioned earlier, and that is that some of your early discs were actually the premium Z plastic that you use today. So why did it cycle out and then back in again?
The big reason was cost. We were competing against discs that were made of cheaper plastic, and for a while we tried to shoulder the cost, but we didn't have the first discs we had weren't that popular, so we couldn't sell enough of them, and eventually we had to go back and get into a cheaper plastic just so we could compete on cost with our competitors.
Now, I have to assume, Jim Cantor, that you did not get into this sport and this business blind. You had to be a Frisbee freak before you ever thought about getting into the business side of things.
Absolutely. Started, well, real early. I think the first flying disc I saw, my cousin's husband brought it over when I was about 8 years old, and it wasn't even a Frisbee. It was some local thing that was produced in Michigan, which is where I was from, and it was called a flying saucer. And it was kind of a real straight-edge disc, and we thought it was the greatest thing. Boy, look at this thing sail through the air, and we used to take that thing out, and we'd throw boomerang shots, make them come back to us. And so I always played a little bit of Frisbee when I was young, and then when I got out of high school, we used to hang out at the lake all the time in the summertime and just kind of play Frisbee on the beach. And just played it a lot and got fairly good at it. People would notice, we were the hot doggers at the beach or whatever and doing trick catches and things. And so freestyle was kind of the entry into the sport. and just got involved in some of the early tournaments and organizing tournaments. And at one point in time, I said, hey, you know, these discs that are out here, they're not that great. We can build better discs, and that's when we started in the late 70s to try to do that.
I want to ask you about how discs are manufactured, and I know that there's probably some trade secrets in there that you want to protect, and that's fine, but for especially for a player who's just coming into the sport, you know, it's kind of a mystery. So can you sort of walk us through from concept to, you know, when that disc arrives, you know, coming out of the plant with a stamp on it, how it all works?
Well, obviously the first part is the design part. In the early days, we a lot of times took existing discs and tried to make modifications to them, you know, try to add tape to the inside rim or shave something down or just try to, you know, change it enough and see what you did affected the flight characteristics. And slowly but surely you kind of develop a knowledge of what shapes do what. And from that point we just got involved in, you know, just building some discs. Again, making changes all the time. We usually, on a lot of discs, we'll have a basic idea of where we want to start with the disc in terms of shapes and weights and weight distribution and flight characteristics, and we'll make some sort of prototype of that disc. And there can be sometimes as many as 15, 20 changes before it actually gets to where you want it to go in terms of shaving weight off one portion or another or changing shapes. And sometimes, you know, you might hit it in two or three tries. We've got to the point now that, you know, we have a pretty good knowledge of how things are going to fly by looking at them. And so we just do a lot of stuff on the computer and then cut it into steel and see what happens.
So when you say you cut it into steel, you actually create the mold is actually a steel version of the disc, and then it goes into the manufacturing process?
When I say cut it into steel, I'm not talking about cutting like a replica of a disc in steel. I'm talking about we cut a mold into steel, which essentially is a reverse of a disc. What a mold actually is, it's just a big hunk of steel with the shape of the disc hollowed out in the middle. It consists of either two pieces or three pieces a lot of the time. And the mold has the ability to be closed up, plastic shot in from the underside. A liquid plastic shoots in from the underside. That's where you get the little nub, sprue, nipple, whatever you want to call it, on the bottom of the disc. And it fills the mold. And then as it cools in the mold, after it cools in the mold, you know, which is usually somewhere around a minute, maybe a little more, mold opens up and you've got your disc. So when I say build them, we cut the designs into a mold, try them out, and then we start making modifications from there.
So when you, you're creating a new disc, and let's say you've got, you know, maybe a half dozen or a dozen prototypes, do you send copies of those out to, say, your team and say, you know, go out, take these in the field, throw them, and tell me what you think? Is that how it works?
To some extent. For the most part, since I've been doing it so long, probably the first person that throws them is myself. I'll go out to a field and just get an idea of where we are. Even though I can't throw as hard and as far as a lot of people, I can get a basic indication of how stable the disc is and what kind of flight characteristics it has. And then if I think it's something that's viable or if it might be a winner, then I'll start shipping a few out to people locally that I have, you know, that I'm confident of their throwing ability and their analysis of discs. And then after that, I'll start shipping out to some of the team people to get feedback. You know, it's not always team people that'll give us feedback. Sometimes, you know, all it takes is a number of the local people. And we say, hey, this disc is definitely flying different. It's flying good. I think it's viable for this niche, which we don't have. And we'll go ahead and put it out and see what happens.
We spoke recently with Discraft founder and president Jim Kenner. Part two of our interview with Mr. Kenner coming up soon. And you're listening to PDGA Radio News.
Since 1979, Discraft has designed and manufactured tournament-quality flying discs for all disc sports. Our disc golf line is second to none. From beginners to world champion pros, disc golfers everywhere rely on the quality, consistency, and durability of every Discraft Pro Golf disc. Discraft, the world leader in disc sports.
Try the new Venom Maximum Distance Driver and the drone in overstable mid-range in the new Pro D plastic for superior grip even when wet from Discraft. So what happens when you shoot a new course record in round two of a tournament? You shoot yourself into third place. Here's this week's Yeti Road Report.
This week I'm calling from the legendary campus of the University of Notre Dame and the Fighting Irish, or as women's pro Leslie DeMarc would say, Go Irish! That's right, I'm in South Bend, Indiana, for the Michiana Open Super Tour, hosted by the Michiana Disc Golf Club and Superstar Tournament Director, Jason Samuel. This small, hard-working club pulled off many things meant for much bigger tournaments. Several days before the tournament, getting around courses we have never played or seen before was a breeze, with walking arrows and out-of-bounds clearly already marked on the courses. The player's guide given out at the Friday night check-in had everything a player needed, and it was nice not to have to sit through a 40-minute morning of player meeting while everyone's muscles cooled down. The tournament landed plenty of hot disc golf action, though, as two course records were set in the open division, including Barry Schultz's blistering 1080 rated round of minus 12 at the tightly wooded Bogo course Sunday morning, and PDGA Radio's own Jay Redding, hey, that's me, shooting a hot minus 10 Sunday afternoon to jump from 8th to 3rd place and setting a course record. And I also earned my prognosticator stripes this weekend when I told 17-year-old phenom Matt Orem from Alabama, when he qualified for the $1,000 winner-take-all best shot finale, that he would pick my raffle ticket and to be his best shot partner, and we would win the $1,000. Well, it happened. Yes! But the biggest news of the weekend came in the amateur ranks, where David Kosaba rang in two aces during Saturday's play. But wait, there's more. His two aces on Saturday were nothing compared to David's back-to-back aces on Sunday afternoon. That's right, four aces in one tournament. A quick fact check leads me to believe that this is a new PDGA tournament record. Man, if the guys on his card were paying $5 for a hole-in-one, David Kosaba sure was a pain in the ace this weekend. Roar!
The PDGA National Tour heads to Columbus, Ohio this weekend for the Brent Hambrick Memorial Open. The tournament director is Dan Busick.
We started the tournament in 1997, and actually this is going to be our ninth year. The tournament is in memory of Brent Hambrick, who was very instrumental in disc golf in Columbus, was one of the actual pioneers of the sport here. His goal was always to make the Columbus Open the Masters tournament of disc golf, and to always improve. And that's what we've tried to do over the years, is to keep his goals and his visions alive. The defending champs this year are Barry Schultz, which will be back, Des Redding, which is also registered, and Brad Hammack in the Masters division. We will be playing two courses this year. We'll be playing the Brent Hambrick Memorial Course, which is a 27-hole course that challenges about every shot in your book. It's three different nines. The front nine's beautiful rolling hills. Runs along a reservoir. The back nine is more secluded with more up and over the top shots, the blind shots. And then the new nine is a combination of both. The second course we'll be playing is right across the dam, and it's sponsored by Discraft. It's a temporary course. It's 18 holes. It's a little over 6,000 feet in length. And again, it's a lot of up and down rolling hills, very scenic. The whole purpose of the tournament is to keep the memory of Brent alive, and also we are a charity fundraiser for the Lymphoma and Leukemia Society. That's one of the main reasons for this tournament, is to help raise money to fight that disease.
Dan Busick is tournament director for this weekend's Brent Hambrick Memorial Open in Columbus, Ohio. A bunch of disc golf business going on this weekend, July 9th and 10th, including the inaugural U.S. Mid-Nationals Championships in High Bridge, Wisconsin. This is a major event, folks. Good luck to everybody participating. In Finland, it's the European Disc Golf Championships this weekend. The Illinois States in Mokena, Illinois, and in Emporia, Kansas, the Glassblown Open. In Florida, it's the Daytona Open. In Quebec, the Capital Classic. In Traverse City, Michigan, the Grand Traverse Open, part of the National Cherry Festival. In Georgia, it is Hotlanta. Johnny Roberts Memorial in Colorado. Plus, in Tulsa, it's the Riverside Glide. Louisiana hosting the Shreveport Challenge. It's the Tahoe Pro-Am in South Lake Tahoe, California this weekend. In Japan, check out the Kyoto Open, the Dave Kimmel Memorial in Alliance, Nebraska. In Manchester, Connecticut, it's the Greater Hartford Open and the Brandenburg Open in Kentucky. Check the full list anytime, pdga.com. And finally this week, if you are keeping a list of Am World's favorites to watch, watch this guy, Toronto Island's Kim Scott Wood. He shot at the Toronto Island Open last weekend. He played pro and he turned down $925 Canadian. That's hard currency. Yeah, this guy's a shooter. He's coming after you if you're going to Am Worlds. And by the way, after his visit to Flagstaff, he does plan on participating in this year's Pro Worlds as well. The guy's name again, Kim Scott Wood of Ontario, a hot shooter this year. Coming to an email box near you by the end of the week is an email from the PDGA. It will be the source of your PDGA election ballot. That's right, we're moving PDGA elections to the summer months, and we would love to have you participate. And to do so, all you need to do is respond to that email, follow the instructions. By August 20th, you'll be voting online. You don't have to mail anything. It's very slick. It's very cool. And if you know somebody who doesn't have a computer but they do want to vote, they can request a paper ballot from the office. They need to do that by August 3rd. And Pro and Am Worlds rundowns. Here's what we got so far. Sign up for Pro Worlds, 220 players. For Am Worlds, 226. And for the Junior Worlds, 39 players. Now, there is still some room for all of those events. If you did not get an invitation, you can still go and participate. But you need to get registered by the following dates. For pros, next Friday, July 15th. And for amateurs, you've got a little more time. July 27th is your deadline for Ams and Juniors to register for the Worlds this year. And again, if you did not get an invitation you would like to participate, register by those dates. For more information, contact the office. The email address is office@pdga.com. And that, my friends, is the Disc Golf News for the week of July 4th. For the PDGA, I'm Brian Sullivan. Our sponsors are Discraft, No Obstacles Disc Golf, and Innova Champion Discs. And until next week, I hope you will get out there, puck some plastic, stay out of the shul, and keep them in the fairways.